Welcome back in, everyone, to a fantastic new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We have a wonderful production to bring you that's part of a fabulous festival happening here in New York. Joining us to talk to us about this production, we have the actor Thomas Hampson, who's currently part of the Cherry Orchard Festival's presentation of Address Unknown. It's playing April 17th, one night only, at the Town Hall, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting cherryorchardfestival.org. We are very excited about bringing you a new festival to us. So with that, let's go ahead and welcome on our guest, Thomas. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation.
I'm so happy to have you here. I'm so happy to be talking about this piece based off of the great novel. Can we start by having you tell us a little bit about what Address Unknown is about?
Yes, sure. And thank you for the invitation. Some of your listeners in New York may know me from my day job, which is usually at the Metropolitan Opera. I appreciate being called an actor, but actually I'm an opera singer. There we are on top of that. And Zhenya is one of the most famous, amazing Evgeny Kissin pianists of our time, but also passionate about the play. And it was actually his invitation that we started to do this. The play was written in the early 30s out of Catherine Taylor's concern about what she saw as, quite frankly, just normal social consequence of slithering fascism and populism that was affecting friends and people that she knew. And she wrote this play, what was then published under a pseudonym because they didn't feel a play like this in the 30s could be published by a woman, which is already a story in of itself. And they published this play, which got an immediate reaction. It's about two friends, a Jewish friend and a German friend, who start a business together selling art in California. The German collecting in across Europe and sending it to California, and people collecting in California. It's very profitable. The German spends some time. Martin Schulze is the character that I play, and Max Eisenstein is my friend in California, and I send him artworks. At first, Max is rather jealous of Martin being back in Germany and home, where that's what Max called home, but became concerned about reports, especially the antagonism towards the Jews. And as he writes to Martin, it becomes quite clear that Martin is being sucked into this populism and eventual fascism. And over a period of 20-some letters and a couple of years' time, and in our real time, about 50 minutes, almost an hour of a play, this friendship turns into a disastrous antagonism, which results in death and tragedy and all of that. But I think that the overwhelming sense is the seductiveness of populism thought and the manipulation of cultural perspectives. And of course, it's anchored in the time of the Holocaust, and that makes it even more relevant. But I think the message is a larger message that any particular epoch can take to heart.
That is an incredible story. Wow.
Yeah, it's very powerful. It's very powerful. Very powerful. Yeah. The letters are very poignant, very specific. The characters, as the evening progresses, Zhenya and my characters, Martin and Max, become quite fleshed out. I think you experience the doubt and the confusion of each one of their particular characters. It's not, you know, this kind of thing is never a smooth road. It's a very jagged, startling development of one's own personality. And I think that's captured brilliantly in this book by Miss Taylor.
It's amazing. So you mentioned, you know, your day job, as it were, you're singing at Metropolitan Opera. So it's curious to me, I mean, like, I would love to know, how did you come upon this piece?
Well, that I must say, I have done some straight theater, as we call it, but not really much. I'm an opera singer and recitalist and pedagogue and that sort of thing. But Zhenya, through Martin Engström, who runs the Verbier Music Festival in the beautiful Alps in Switzerland in the summer, very famous music festival, Martin called up and said, Xenia has this fantastic idea of this play. Do you know Address Unknown? And I said, I think I've vaguely heard of the title, but let me look at it. And so I'll send you the book. He would love to do this play. This play is an epistolary play, meaning it's literally the reading of letters back and forth more than actual staging. Although we do have some staging that helps. And so I read the book. I was completely taken by it. And Xenia and I have known each other for years, haven't made music that often together, but have known each other for years. And, you know, I just signed on. Yeah, sure, great. And then the producer showed up, and then it actually turned out to be quite a family affair, because our producer is Xenia's sister-in-law, and Xenia's wife plays the beautiful sister of Max and bride of Martin. Well, no, she's not the bride. She plays the bride and the sister. She plays both characters. Anyway, you have to come see it. I don't mean to confuse anybody, but there are two women characters. One is the sister of Max, and the other one is the bride of Martin. And she plays both in the play, which is she's very good at that. So anyway, we have done this in several cities. It is completely dependent upon our mutual schedules, but mostly where Xenia travels probably even more than I do. But we're always incredibly excited that, you know, his concert, for instance, is in New York. I'm in Cleveland right now. He's coming to Cleveland. He's on his way to New York. And so this just simply fortuitously dropped inside of the Cherry Orchard Festival, which I am working with for the first time. And I think Jane is quite good friends with Maria Shklova, who is our contact and who directs the whole thing, the festival. But it looks like a fantastic endeavor. I know Town Hall very, very well. I made my recital debut in 1986 in Town Hall. And I did a very well-known American song program in 1988, filmed by WNET, called I Hear America Singing in Town Hall. I love the hall. It's, I think, one of the great historical religious places in central Manhattan, I must say. I was thrilled. And they said, well, would you mind doing this in Town Hall? I almost cried. I think it's fantastic. So there's a lot of emotion coming in this next week. But the most powerful part, and I know I'm rambling a bit, but the most powerful part of all this is of course, Xenia's and mine's friendship. And the more we do this, the more depth we find in each one of these very complex characters, Max and Martin. I think the paradox, if you will, of the entire situation, which again, I think is, I don't want to wave a finger here or get terribly political, but again, I think every epoch should be examining these kinds of social and political forces on normal human beings, if that's diplomatically enough stated.
I love it. I love it. That is fantastic. And I want to kind of build off something that you had mentioned regarding the way the show's coming together, you know, getting the rehearsal timed up just right with the travel and that. You touched on it a little bit, but I want to dive a little bit more and ask, what has it been like developing this show as we roll into the performance next week?
Well, the show, certainly the structure of it and the scenery, if you will, all of that, it's very simple and very direct, but that stays the same. Xenia and I, we just did a run. We did a couple of shows in England and in Switzerland last December. So the first thing we always do is just get together and read and talk. And usually something has happened in each one of our lives. It's only been 3 or 4 months, but you know, the world is in tremendous turmoil, and our political world that we live in internationally and nationally is, of course, extraordinarily volatile at this particular period of time. So, you know, we have this conversation, we find ourselves and to discuss this. And, you know, this came up in the paper, and I thought of that third letter that you read. I mean, we have this kind of conversation rather quickly, and then we just start literally running the play and rehearsing. We'll read this and do this play certainly 5, 6, 7 times, you know, before we relaunch it, as it were, on Thursday or on the 17th.
Super, super. Well, you mentioned the subject of the play, this powerful story that you're telling. Is there a message or a thought you hope audiences take away from this work?
Wake up. Yeah. You know, be alive, think. You know, we throw around phrases like fake news and propaganda a little too frivolously today, and God knows it's a pretty serious equation. As a singer, I'm very involved as well on some other projects with musicians like Daniel Hope. We've made a couple of programs on literally telling the story of 1938 through the contemporary music of the time, and then another show called LA 1943, and that rather completely contradictory situation where the Jewish community is literally creating Hollywood at the same time they're sending money back to the Jews that are being killed in Germany. And so we have Hitler dying in the same month that Carousel premieres and Roosevelt dies at the beginning. You know, it's an extraordinary story. And I love these historical perspectives as a musician. I love letting music tell the story of historical developments and historical perspectives. And American literature and music does that extraordinarily well. So I'm reading at the moment a couple of other books about the 30s and the 40s of music and the development of musical memory, if you will, in the 20th century, both for Americans and for Europeans. So this play just keeps kind of landing in the middle of my brain, and you know, I'm so grateful that we can keep doing it. I wish we could do it more often, and I hope that we can sometime carve out the time to actually film it, really, really make this a statement. I think people, what I get out of this play coming out of it is a bit of a stomach ache, because I have to say some pretty awful things as a German captivated by the mind of Adolf Hitler. But that's, you know, on stage, it's not much different than playing Don Giovanni. He's not exactly the nicest guy in the world either. So that is what we do. But you do, you know, when you play these kinds of characters, you do, you know, you feel like you need a beer and a shower before you can actually be around other people. It's pretty awful. But I think the overriding sense of the public in the last publics that we had this play for, and the feedback, both, you know, German, French, English, is the overwhelming association to our contemporary times, the overwhelming relevance of contemplating what is propaganda, what is populism. If populism goes unchecked, is it inevitably going to be fascism? Are we liberating ourselves or controlling one another? I mean, all these, you know, big social questions that are endemic to democracy. I think that with the development of so many things in our contemporary political scene, internationally and nationally, I think that's why we're seeing so many new films and books about the 40s and the 30s and the 40s. I think it deserves a rethink. I think we've been perhaps too arrogantly indicting of people who lived through the tumultuous Nazi period. And I'm not by any means forgiving on any level of Nazism, but I am quite aware of the insidiousness of political forces above what we would call normal life. People just, you and I, trying to get along and raise our kids and earn our living and move forward. So that's when I say wake up. I think we must live in a heightened awareness of movements, propositions, propaganda, if you will. That's such an awful word, but it is the right word. That's exactly what it is. It's the postulation of a narrative that may or may not be true. And this is something we must be terribly guarded against, and more, probably more than ever. And it's unbelievably insightful that in 1933, this kind of novel on these kinds of very realizable, believable letters could have been written.
That is a brilliant message. I love that. And it's, I mean, like you said, it's so timely. It's so important.
Yes.
That leads to my final question for this first part, which is, who do you hope have access to this piece?
I hope everybody has access. You know, there's a BBC production of it on YouTube. I think everybody should read it. I think it goes through waves. When it was republished in 1995, it was hugely popular. It's been translated into I don't know how many languages. I think those that know of it are extremely keen that more people know about it. And I think that You know, I think having a New York presence in Town Hall with this beautiful festival is incredibly important. I think Zhenya and I are extremely grateful that our fame, if you will, on another side of the fence can bring people to an awareness. There's a lot of people that are, you know, my goodness, Hamsun and Kissin, why can't they just do a recital and call it a day? You know, but no, we've got this play. And I must say, my colleague, Evgeny, you know, this is probably more a complete new travel and road or landscape to his artistic life than it is mine. And it's extraordinary, the thought and the effort that he puts into it. And it's extraordinary the relationship that we have as friends and colleagues, but how that can turn into something quite quickly on stage. And that's what I do for a living, but not necessarily him. And it's extremely moving, extremely powerful.
Switching things up for the second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better, pull the curtain, if you will. And I'm very intrigued to get to know you a bit more. And I want to start by asking you, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, I didn't realize this was a five-hour podcast, so we'll just go on. Anybody who's listening who knows me is already laughing, thinking, oh boy, did that guy walk into the thicket? Asking Hamsun a question like this is like pulling a 9-foot Chatty Cathy cord. You know, I love what I do. I love the arts as the evidence of who we are. I love the plays and the operas and the librettos and the poems of which I sing from. I love inhabiting, and I feel that's my job as a recreative artist. I'm not particularly creative at all, but as a recreative artist to digest, ingest, redigest, assimilate, acquire as much connectivity and understanding of where these words and thoughts come from. Words really is a metaphor of the thoughts that then inspires a musical language. That's the world I actually live in and day out. When the music is gone and it's just the words and it's just like a play like this, first of all, I have to get out of my singing gear, you know, and just get into the text and, you know, and keep it simple and keep it direct. Which I love. It teaches me about singing, and singing teaches me about elocution or articulation, if you will. But that having the responsibility and liberty at the same time to find the source of inflection of a sentence that's already written is a huge challenge. But I love it, and you know. Like any actor would say, you know, you read it and read it and read it, and you take every word and inflect it differently and backwards and forwards, and you find as many ways until it one of them makes sense. This character specifically is also near and dear to me because I live in Europe more than in America anymore, and I probably speak German daily more than I do English anymore. And people say I talk with a funny accent because I probably speak English more to people who don't speak English anymore. So I as an American, I'm quite sensitive to that. When you first come back to a first rehearsal and everybody kind of looks at you like, where's he been? But in this case, for this play, I love the fact that I say the text. I say Martin has a very distinct German accent that comes up in the text, you know, when he would talk. And I try not to make it too demonstrative and, you know, as if he can't speak English. But yet there is just this tinge every so often of our dear leader and the inflection of the emphasis that he must have when he is talking about such political important things, you know. So it's fun to work in that world. You know, asking me specifically about this or that playwright or author, I'm probably better off with composers and poets. You know, my world as an opera singer is pretty much overwhelmed by the great literature, as we call it, you know, the big, you know, kind of the Shakespeare of it all. I do love going to plays, but it's a little bit of a busman's holiday for me, so we don't get to as much theater as we'd like to. But I, you know, there's very little that I read that I'm not somehow captivated by or impressed of the turn of the phrase or something that works and clicks and, oh my God, I wish I'd thought of how to do that kind of thing. So it all connects together. I'm not sure I answered your question, but I gave you some more ideas.
That is a wonderful answer and a wonderful list of inspirations. I love that. That's fabulous. I want to ask you now, what is your favorite part about working in the performing arts?
You know, I that's a wonderful question. One doesn't get asked that so much. I am, you know, I've been doing this a while. You know, I'm in my fourth decade, and I'm so eternally grateful that I still have the physical, mental, and vocal resources to do what I do. And I mean that very generally, genuinely, anyone who's listening, I'm the first one that says thank you after I've successfully competed another recital or a concert. But in general, I have always been excited about what I do. I get up in the morning and I, you know, yeah, you can be tired, you got a rough schedule, you've got logistics and so forth, but what do I get to look at today? Whose music do I get to understand today? Whose thoughts that are far more interesting than my own personal thoughts do I get to inhabit today? And whether that's for three people or 300 people or 3,000 people is really secondary in my world and always has been. I take very seriously that when I stand on stage, I want people as quickly as possible to not be thinking about Thomas Hampson. I want them as soon as possible to be in the world of Schumann, in the world of Schubert, in the world of Mahler, in the world of Verdi, the world of opera, in the character, in the thought, in here. You know, even in the first minutes you see Max and Martin, Evgeny and me on stage, I think you quite immediately see physical characteristics that immediately identify the cultures from which we come. And this kind of realizable evidence of who we are as human beings and trading the ideas, sometimes very contradictory, sometimes extraordinarily, I want to say unappetizing, but that's just way too, they're disgusting. But they need to be said. We need to, as people, always be aware of the line we don't cross, in my opinion. So much of the theater world, especially in the opera world, is dictated or not dictated, is defined, in my opinion, by taboo. What would that character in that opera at that time never do? He would never shake a hand. He would never walk up to somebody. He would never sit down in the presence of a woman. He would never stand to this or that. You know, finding out what would that person actually never say? And, you know, a character like Onegin, that's an enormous question. And, of course, that's sort of the audacity of Don Giovanni, because Don Giovanni is his ability to completely shock people it can't possibly be true. And by the time people sort of realize that this horrible thing has happened and this horrible guy said what he said, he's already moved on to the next victim. So I think that's, you know, that's those kinds of re-examining of personal traits and personal psychologies and motivations of what we do as people is me as an artist. That's what I'm completely committed to and I love doing. And I think that's what the arts are for. I think it is the great laboratory which we can find not just refuge, but we're allowed to stand on that island by ourselves and say, aha, this is me. I get this. Oh, I figured that out. Or I don't get that at all. I'd never want to hear that again as long as I live. That's your right too. But the right of self-determination, but more importantly, in my opinion, self-awareness is something that the older I get, I'm very devoted to.
What a stupendous answer. I'm living for this. This is so wonderful. Well, now we've arrived at my favorite question to ask guests. And that, of course, is what is your favorite theater memory? Or even what is your favorite performing arts memory?
Wow. You know, my goodness me. That's like a kid in a candy store. You know, like I've said, I've been doing this for 40 years and I come from the Northwest. Washington State. So the world I live in now and the arts world that I have become famous in and have earned my life in has been an adventure from get-go. So, you know, from the first moment of someone, you know, putting their hand on my shoulder and in the academy time and saying, you know, I think you've got it, go for it, which is a big moment for any young person, to winning significant roles or honors or working with icons. I'm probably the last walking, breathing, living singer to have sung with Leonard Bernstein and made records with him in the Vienna Philharmonic. And in fact, my debut in Carnegie Hall in 1990 was his last performance. So in his last 4 or 5 years of life, I was very much, you know, part of his performing orbit, which, you know, it was an extraordinary experience, and I can't take any credit for it. I mean, all I can be is grateful that Lenny saw in me as a young person something I couldn't possibly known in my own life. And fast forward, I'm literally the age that Lenny was when he met me. And so, you know, I work with a lot of young colleagues now, and I'm very grateful to that. I'm very involved pedagogically, but I see it really as a passing on those things that I've accumulated, those contacts and experiences. A favorite one, I mean, hell, I don't know how can I mean, you know, walking off the stage with Leonard Bernstein, having sung 2 Mahler cycles at the age of 32. Yeah, that'll go up there, you know. But I was very close with Nicholas Hanenkur, Wolfgang Sawallisch, to some extent Abado. You know, I've been with all these great musicians, done recitals with some of the great pianists of late. Mata Argerich, who's a very close friend. So, you know, to be recognized, there's various recognitions in our industry. I'm a designated master singer of the Metropolitan Archives or the Metropolitan Tradition. That is an honor beyond belief. We used to have the Opera News Awards, which was a very big deal, and unfortunately that's been discontinued, or at least temporarily, maybe permanently, I don't know. So, yes, every once in a while, those very significant honors come up or very significant dates. You know, my first Don Carlo, or not my first, but Don Carlo, my first Don Carlo in Vienna Staatsoper, and the King Philip II was the famous Nikolai Gierhoff. You know, you pinch yourself. You know, you sing an Arabella of Richard Strauss in the theater in Dresden, which debuted its life, premiered life. I mean, These are the kinds of things that we as classical singers get, you know, can get quite emotional. You know, I love living in Europe and walking next to walls that were built 300 years before America was even thought about. A lot of living in Europe has informed me to my own cultural heritage as an American. And I've been obviously very busy with the Song of America project over the last 20, 25 years with the Library of Congress. Films and recordings and projects with my Hamsung Foundation, which is about understanding various cultures through poetry and music. That's hamsungfoundation.org if you're at all interested. You know, I can't give you a favorite, but I can give you a pantheon.
Oh my gosh. Those are amazing. Absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for sharing those.
Thanks for asking.
Well, my final question for our interview today is, if our listeners would like more information about Address Unknown or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Well, you know, like everybody else, I've actually was one of the first classical artists to have a website. So thomashamson.com has been around for a while. Hamsungfoundation.org is quite fun. And there's a subsite to that called songofamerica.net, in which we offer a timeline dashboard of consecutive events in American history with the poets and composers and the songs. And you can connect the dots and inform yourself about any particular time of American history through the eyes of our poets and the ears of our composers. And I'm very proud of that project. You can do that to some extent with international literature as well. But, you know, the websites are a good place to start. Of course, we're on Facebook and we're on Instagram, and, you know, we do. I love the part of social media that allows me to share my life and my professional life and excitement with everybody. And curiously, by having all that, and I have a very significant team around me that does this with and for me, it allows my intensely private time to be very private. And my family is very private, and my family is number one. And that's what centers me and keeps me going. And, you know, especially now traveling after all of these years, much more with my wife. You know, we've got now 5 grandkids, and we've got the kids in various cities in the world. And so, you know, we're really trying to enjoy that part of our life as well. So I think if you're curious about Thomas Hampson, you can, if you really want to know, you'll know which button to push, you know. Address unknown, I would simply Google it, and you'll get a wonderful reference. Or if you have this rather new marvelous browser, I don't get anything this, I'm just really crazy about this Arc browser, which just has a whole nother interface with the internet. If you just type in address unknown, or now in AI, type it into Bing or Chat or Claude or whoever the heck whoever, one of these ubiquitous nameless sites of supreme intelligence, I'm sure they'll take you through all the Alice in Wonderland rabbit holes you could possibly want in connection to this truly remarkable 50-minute play.
Wonderful. Well, Thomas, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me, as you said, about this truly remarkable play. And it's been such an honor to speak with you. So I really, really thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's great to get to know you.
My guest today has been the legendary actor and opera singer Thomas Hampson, who's part of the Cherry Orchard Festival's presentation of Address Unknown, having a one-night-only performance on April 17th at the Town Hall. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting cherryorchardfestival.org. You are not going to want to miss this incredible, powerful, timely show. This is just such a brilliant work. And it's been such an honor speaking with Thomas today about that. We also have some contact information for our guests and his organizations, his foundations, which we'll be posting on our social media posts as well as on our episode description. But make sure you run, don't walk, get your tickets now for Address Unknown happening April 17th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a Stage Whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.